I'm Linda Pelaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to the food scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here today with Amy Chaplin. Am I saying that correctly?
You are,
you
yes.
Crazy Aussies. I never know how you pronounce anything. Say fish and chips for me.
Fish and chips.
How do you tell that differently from a New Zealander? I've heard that that was, you know, the phrase to make a New Zealander say to make sure.
Yeah, that's true. There are certain words you can tell, although I'm often mistaken.
For a New Zealand, it's Oceania. I know that from that game Risk. You are all the purple people. This book that you have in the Whole Food Kitchen, which is funny, apropos enough, this, you know, episode is sponsored by Whole Foods, is not to be mistaken with Whole Foods necessarily.
That's right.
But what it does provide us is an amazing idea of how to set up your life, your pantry, your kitchen, for, you know, the best life possible. You know, healing benefits, detoxifying, but just this spirit, this aura, this goodness about you. I got this book in the mail and I just started flipping through it, looking at it, and this mantra came up, and it was kind of undefined at first, you know, cook right, eat right, which you see in a lot of cookbooks, but something so distinctly different happened with this. And I think it goes to your childhood. Reading that intro about how you lived on the land, 30 miles away from anything, tell me about what that was like.
Oh, yeah, it's true. It does go back then. Well, that was just all that I knew. I mean, I didn't really know any differently. It wasn't like we moved from the city to live off the land and build our own house or anything. I grew up like that. So it was, I sort of feel like being a chef now and throughout my career, I've always been sort of searching for the true flavor of a perfect, you know, freshly picked cherry tomato or, you know, homegrown Brussels sprouts and things like that. Like, I feel like it really ingrained in me how things should taste, and also wanting to honor that just amazingness of nature and how perfect it is and how we don't really need to do too much.
Yeah. So, I mean, this purity, which may go back to your childhood again, about this purity of life. I mean, what you did at your family's house seemed like everything. You baked bread, you milled your own grains, you had a garden.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems a little bit...
Even had kept bees. There's plenty of things that didn't fit in that intro. Made ginger beer. And my mother made tofu, used the water from making the tofu to wash the floors. I mean, you know, it was a very sort of eco-friendly lifestyle.
But at the same time, I don't like the word sustainable because I don't think a lot of people know what it means. And it isn't used correctly, but it's... You close the cycle. I mean, you do everything there and you use everything to the best of its ability. And that shows true in this book, too. And in your career, I was a big fan of Angelica's Kitchen. Finding out that you worked there only made sense after reading this book. And again, having this mantra. How did you take what you learned as a kid, those little techniques, those steps, into the professional kitchen?
Oh, that's a really good question. I feel like every time I cook, I guess I'm really wanting to cook something delicious, something that I feel like, something that is, you know, good for me. It's not all about just being really healthy and feeling good about healthy, but it's like what food makes me feel good. So knowing what did growing up, I guess, and, you know, throughout my teens and early 20s, when I got into a kitchen, I just wanted to make delicious things and I just gravitated towards what naturally made me feel the best and made me want to keep cooking. So does that answer your question?
Oh, yeah, no, I because I'm trying to envision right now what your mother's parties look like. Because I think there's that same sense of spirit, too, that happens in this book and with your cooking. But what happened during your mom's parties? What was served? What did the table look like?
Oh, a lot happened. Well, the thing was that I feel that really sort of separated my mother's parties from sort of any party was that she really was lavish about things. Like she would really make, you know, buy homemade pasta. She wouldn't always make it herself, but she'd make, you know, huge amounts of pesto. She'd marinate cheese. She'd, you know, get the best olive oil bulk and we'd use it. And it was very sort of lavish and generous. And also, don't forget, she, you know, she loved good champagne and we'd make cocktails. And so we were in charge, my sister and I, of making daiquiris, which was a bad idea, very young. So it's sort of, we're both in the food business, so it's pretty funny, but we're sort of natural hostesses. But it was in the middle of nowhere, really, with this sort of small community of people and everyone would dress up. Like, it was kind of crazy. We'd have these parties for Christmas and often have them at our house because we had this big open plan house. So everyone would arrive and it would always be like fully dressed, you know, in the middle of the bush. So it's sort of a funny scene. But everything was focused around food. I mean, everyone in that whole area grew their own vegetables, you know, made their own cheeses, milked a cow, you know, and cooked themselves. So we'd all get together and everyone would sort of bring their specialty dish. And I feel like being surrounded by, you know, all those foodies. I mean, everybody was just really passionate about it. And it was just sort of the way of life. It wasn't really like a newfound thing. I mean, you had no choices. You either did it or you ate, you know, I don't know what, packaged food, I guess. And there wasn't really much even of that around. You know, there's no convenience store or restaurants. So we really did do everything ourselves. So it definitely had a big impact on the way I cook now.
I feel like a lot of traveling to eat, it was different growing up because your mother carried around a billy can. Tell me what that is and how odd a situation that must be.
Well, she always liked to be prepared. So, you know, we'd have she still does now, a thermos in the car. So it's always got tea or coffee, or she had to bring her milk frother with her and, you know, make a cappuccino. You know, she could always light a fire wherever we went. But we used to just love to, you know, go on trips. And trips in Australia are really long. So you really need to, you know, and there's nowhere to stop in between. Often there's nothing in between. So you really pack your own everything. So, and I still do that today. It drives everyone crazy, but I'm always like packing food and bring a thermos wherever I go. So, yeah, not the billy can, though, because I don't think lighting fires is that easy.
Yeah,
here,
but that's just a little portable stove, right?
It's like a little can, tin can with a lid, and you actually have to build a fire and you boil. So it's like a kettle. You know, you make like good, strong black tea in it.
I mean, I really hope you don't do a billy can restaurant next for your own sake.
Don't worry.
But it's all about setting yourself up, because going on long trips, running a restaurant, it's about planning. Mm. And I think the most important part of this book in the Whole Food Kitchen is the pantry and how you set yourself up for, you know, fun and variety. Because the big intimidation of books like this is what you have to have already. And of course, you lived a life with a lot of bulk goods. So you had a lot at your disposal, but you really don't need much to make delicious food.
No, you definitely don't. I mean, I've got a big pantry stocking section there, but I never, except for doing this book, have everything on hand. And right now I've got so many ingredients from having and trying all different unusual grains and beans and things. But it really does help to have a bit of variety and just be and have them all there, like I talk about, in jars, so you can see them, so you can just pull out something and be like, oh my god, I haven't had this for a while, and let me soak it and then I'll make something tomorrow. I mean, I don't really think about what I'm going to make because I don't know what I'm going to feel like tomorrow, but I sort of usually have a good idea depending on the weather. But I feel like that really just gives you a head start. You don't really have to think too much. You've got some good oil, you've got some good vinegars, you know, some grains and beans. I mean, then you just need to pick up some vegetables.
So let's talk about when you used to work in kitchens, Angelica's Kitchen, specifically, you know, a very lauded vegetarian vegan restaurant here in New York. And obviously you have a different kind of pantry there than you did at home. But what did you cook for yourself when you went home or were at home while working that job?
Oh, really simple things like steamed vegetables. That's usually what I'd come. Although I did still like to cook at home. It's so different. You know, I really missed it. I sort of missed being home for breakfast because I used to start at, you know, 6 a.m. there. So whenever I had the chance, I would actually cook at home. I know that sounds weird, but
no,
I did
that too.
Still
it zens me out a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, I just still like, there's nothing beats home cooked food, and I think that's where my life has sort of gone now. Just, you know, it's just like what you can create at home. It's kind of amazing the way we can share it with others as well. But yeah, the restaurant was great fun and really wonderful for that, really to push you creatively and come up with new ideas and new ways to use things. I really love that, because I think at home we can fall into a sort of more of a routine and get stuck sometimes. So yeah, that was a great experience.
I mean, there were also wonderful vendors at the restaurant that sold tofu for, what, 35 yeah. years, sea vegetables, all these amazing things. And buying those in small amounts and incorporating them into your pantry make wonderful dishes. And now I want to kind of jump into that pantry, because it is a long section of this book, too. It's funny. You know, I think it's half pantry, half recipes.
Yeah.
If not, maybe more pantry than recipes.
Yeah,
in this book.
That was, it took a lot of time creating that, and it grew and grew and grew. Like, it started out very simple.
Yeah.
And then we realized, this is really going to help set people up and set the book apart, because, like you said, you don't have to have, you know, you come across a recipe and you find like umeboshi vinegar. You've already read all about it in the pantry, or you can look it up mm-hmm. and then know all the different recipes you can use it in. So I feel like it's sort of, it's maybe more enticing to get those more unusual ingredients so that you don't feel like you only use them once.
Yeah. Well, I know you cater for, or private chef for a lot of people. You've worked with Liv Tyler, Natalie Portman. What do you want them to have in their pantry for you to use?
Well, all of the things, ideally you have a kitchen stocked with all of the things that are listed in the book, which is a lot of items. But there's some basics that I feel like I can't live without, you know, like really good short grain brown rice and sweet rice to combine together, and chickpeas and oats and raw almonds. I mean, those are the sort of things I turn to daily, and also to cook for my clients too.
I mean, let's talk about whole grains, because this book is about whole food living. What does that actually mean to you?
That means to me, you know, true whole foods are really foods that are as nature intended. And things, a lot of grains and beans have changed over time, as have vegetables. But now, you know, we're becoming more aware of all these beautiful heritage foods and heirloom grains and beans. So I feel like it's as close as possible to the way nature grows things. And I think that it can be confused sometimes, because some grains aren't whole, but people think they're eating a whole food diet. So I really tried to stay true to true whole food ingredients and do as much as possible with them.
Well, I think it was really interesting to see you talk about water as well. I mean, talk about a base ingredient. How important filtered water is in your cooking.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's amazing the difference it makes with flavor, but also for health reasons. And there's nothing wrong with our water here. We have good water. It just needs to be filtered. So I don't not promote bottled water at all, but I just really feel that getting a good filter just changes your life in the kitchen, because I feel like you can really feel good about drinking it, taking it with you, tea, and cooking all your grains and everything that absorbs liquid. So
the avoidance of plastics, BPAs. I mean, these are things that are ingrained in a lot of people, but when you're setting up a kitchen, setting up a pantry, I think a lot of people just, you know, put them in Tupperware, put them up, but glass is important to you as well.
My whole family's obsessed with jars, so we all collect and can't get rid of jars. It drives all our partners crazy. I was just complaining to my mother that I can't even close the drawer that I've got my jars in. She's like, you know, they're going to stop making glass one day. And I thought, oh, God, yeah, maybe. But you can never have too many. And I just feel like it's so nice to carry things around in glass, to eat out of glass, you know, and to store things in glass. Not only is it safer, it's just, it feels right.
And it's that much easier to clean.
And it's so easy to clean, yeah.
Well, we're going to take a quick break and talk about what is actually in those glass jars, how to fill up a pantry, and all the delicious things you can make there with. You've been listening to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.org. We'll be right back.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Hey, and welcome back to the Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here with Amy Chaplin, cooking in the Whole Food Kitchen. And we kind of talked about what that means, but how do you set yourself up for that is more important. What grains do you need? What sweeteners do you need? And, you know, you talked about a few of them, but let's kind of expand on that. Breakfast. What are some of your favorite things to eat for breakfast?
Oh, I'm kind of... Breakfast is one thing that I can sort of happily eat the same thing every day. And there's two recipes in the pantry section that I sort of eat 6 months and 6 months of the year. So one is like a hot oatmeal with all these superfoods in it and almond milk, and the other one is a cold version with chia seeds and things. So I, for breakfast, stocking things that I would use in, you know, those dishes is what I always have on hand. So like oats and chia and hemp seeds and raw almonds and things, yeah, along those lines.
Yeah. I mean, the black rice pudding. That looks amazing to me. And, you know, black rice I don't often see towards the beginning of the day, but for certain ethnic cuisines. Why that choice?
That was something that I ate as a kid in Bali with my family, and we all loved it. I remember just having it every day there. And then I went back again recently, and I just remembered how much I loved it. So I thought I need to make a version that is sort of, that's very sweet there and with a lot of coconut milk. So this is like a little lighter version. It does have some coconut in it, but it's sort of got a naturally sweet taste from the black rice. And it's so hearty and filling. It's kind of good when it's cold.
Spelt, teff, buckwheat, corn grits. There are so many grains that you can kind of riff on. After grains comes beans and legumes. You know, it's easier to have a whole bunch of dried beans than it is buy, you know, canned beans and dump them out, I think, volume-wise. But the flavor that you get from that pot liquor, I can't even tell people how important that is to cooking.
Yeah, you cannot. I mean, you can't buy a canned bean after you've been cooking them yourself. And it's sort of a drag sometimes because it could be easier. But you really can't beat the flavor of freshly cooked beans. And that's something that I get into a lot in the book, because you can kind of disguise it sometimes if you rinse them well. This is a canned bean, you know, and then you boil it or drain it. But it does take some work, I think, to take away that tinny kind of flavor. So I really encourage everyone to get a pressure cooker, because that really changes your life. You can have creamy, delicious, flavorful beans in half an hour or under. So I think they're a great investment, and you can use them as a pot for cooking anything as well. So it's not just like a one-use gadget.
The heirloom beef bourguignon kind of blew my mind. Tell me about that dish.
Oh, that's delicious. Yeah, it's a really good wintry one. I guess when I see like beautiful beans, I think, how can you really show these off? Like, not just have them as an ingredient or as a protein or, you know, hiding in a soup. So I really wanted to kind of highlight their beauty when I found this jar of Christmas lima beans in Italy one day. And I was like, oh my God, these are so beautiful. And so I bought them and then created that dish with wine and herbs and, you know, made it rich.
And you don't miss the meat at all. I mean, it's so hearty, so wonderful. I mean, that's another preconception that I think a lot of people have, that you can't have depth of flavor as a vegetarian, as a vegan, but this book will certainly dispel that.
Yeah, no, thank you. I'm glad you think so. I think that it takes a little more work to get the depth, because you don't just have to sort of simmer. I mean, I feel like meat is very easy in terms of, like, you know, dinner on the table quickly or, you know, and I think it does, you get a real richness quite easily from like roasting a chicken or something. So, but for making those kind of really memorable stews, I feel like making the effort to do a roasted vegetable stock or things like that, I feel like that really adds a lot of flavor, but, you know, it takes a bit more time.
I want to talk about nuts, because they're, again, so versatile. You teach people how to make their own nut milks. You talk about sprouting. There's condiments like Dukka. There's a, how do you say, G-O-M-A, the...
Oh, gomazio.
Yeah, gomazio. And these simple little things that are comprised of things that we know, too, you know, really elevate a dish to another level.
Yes, that's right. And I think that is the key, is sort of having some really good condiments. That's what I have a section in the pantry about, that, about making your own and having them on hand, but also things you can buy. But yeah, just simple toasted sesame seeds when they're toasted fresh and ground with sea salt is just amazing on rice. It's so simple and so tasty.
Superfoods. What are they and why do we need them?
Well, superfoods are just really potent ingredients that can be added. I feel like they're an easy addition to your diet. You know, you can add goji berries or hemp seeds or these golden berries that I talk about in the book to really anything. It's like they can be a great snack. They can be added to breakfast. But I feel like so many of the foods that are listed in that pantry are really could be called superfoods because they're all so nutritious. But I think that that's just how we're used to categorizing those kind of things that are a little more unusual.
Bee pollen, flax seeds.
Yeah, bee pollen as well is amazing, yeah.
You know, obviously these add flavor too as well as texture, but the way that you build a dish is really striking because you care about the visual aspect of it too. You know, it's almost painterly how kind of amazing. And you read some of the descriptions like spring miso soup with lemon and it's just evoking spring, a little tartness from that lemon and obviously that umami of the miso. How do you think about the complexity of a dish but still make it simple?
Oh, yeah, I think about, I guess when I'm thinking, well, I always cook really seasonally, so it's usually like the lemon, like you're kind of craving that freshness when spring arrives and you don't always have an abundance of local vegetables then. So I guess I just think about really what I feel like and then that it just grows from there. I just think, oh, this sounds good and feels good. And then, you know, I see what looks the best at the market or my health food store or something. And then I'll add that as well. I sort of feel like they come in roundabout ways sometimes, but other times it's just like, oh yeah, that's perfect together. Like,
yeah.
I love that combination. And I feel like I want the food to not be so far out there. Like I don't want to add goji berries to everything or, you know, I am very careful about where I put things. I feel like it does need to make sense. It's not just about, I feel like sometimes vegetarian or vegan cooking is about throwing it all in and just like, yeah, it's all good, you know? And I feel like it isn't, it doesn't all
yeah.
go, you know,
everything has intention. And yeah. You know, what I love is that you actually use collard greens in a way that I've never seen them used before. And that's what I'm craving right now, even though it's not in season, is the summer rolls with macadamia lime sauce.
Mm, that's a yummy one. Yeah, you can make that now.
Yeah.
Just change the vegetables inside.
Will do.
Yeah.
A curried soca with cilantro coconut chutney. I love soca so much. And I love chickpea flour. It's an important part, obviously, of your pantry, but it's also gluten-free. I mean, there are so many healing and health benefits to the way you cook as well. You kind of cater menus towards certain people's diets or outlooks on life.
Do I?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do constantly. Like, because I'm so used to cooking for people that have dietary restrictions or, you know, allergies or just want to be super healthy. So there's always, and I actually enjoy that. I enjoy the creativity that comes from someone that can't eat a lot of different things or just, you know, because vegan is still pretty broad to me, although people think it's limiting. I actually feel like, oh, that's like, oh my God, there's so much to make. But yeah, I'm used to doing that. And I really enjoy the challenge.
Yeah. I mean, even little twists like turmeric lemonade. I mean, it is standard lemonade with a little bit of turmeric that adds that, you know, little build towards it. But what is like a base vegan recipe that you see a lot of people make and that you can do a simple iteration and make it that much better?
Oh my God, that's a hard question. I feel like it depends, I guess, with food blogs, there is actually a lot of dishes with turmeric now. I feel like a lot of people are discovering how good it can taste, especially if you can get it fresh. It's kind of amazing when you get it fresh, but I can't think of one recipe that I feel,
Let's talk about the lasagna then. Because even though it may not be vegan, I mean, you use cashew cheese. You use, you know, different ways of not having to make a noodle with an egg, not make a pasta dish with an egg, which, you know, I know egg replacing is a big thing in veganism. But making such a lush lasagna, how did you construct all those layers?
Well, I feel like I don't want it to be like, oh, this is like a classic lasagna, but vegan version. I never really want my food to come across that way. I really always want it just to be really delicious for what it is. And so occasionally I'm doing that for clients that are craving something and then they, you know, work out a way to replace it. But mostly I'm creating new dishes that are just delicious in their own right. That's my goal. So with that, I was actually thinking of a ravioli, how you have like a beautiful ricotta and butternut squash ravioli. And I thought, oh, that would be really nice in, you know, a layered pasta, because making ravioli is a bit of a pain, especially vegan. I don't even know if you can do it that well. But yeah, so that's how that came about. And then sage and adding caramelized onions, and that just sort of adds richness.
A little tofu ricotta for a little more texture to
it. Yeah, I mean, you do need it. And I guess that is a cheese replacement, and you could make it with regular ricotta, but it's sort of, it all just goes together and doesn't taste too rich.
I mean, I also want to talk about the simple things. Not that those are complex, but everyone's all about kale salad these days. And you make this wonderful kale slaw with this mustard dressing. You make a wonderful dessert. What is it? A strawberry rose canton, which I had never heard of before. But things are so elemental, so straightforward, so easy, and yet look so refreshing.
Thank you.
Obviously it takes many years to get to that point, but with this book, it will take much less.
Right. Yeah. Hopefully people will just feel like they can jump right in and make it immediately.
What are some of your takeaways from this book? I mean, I know you've been living this your whole life, but what do you want people to kind of voyage into first? Is it cooking a recipe? Is it stocking a pantry? Or is it just experience this kind of food?
Well, I think depending on where you are with your food journey and how you cook at home, I think you can jump in if you're ready for it. But I really hope people can take away just the feeling of the empowerment, I guess, of cooking for yourself, cooking healthily, feeling like you can throw together a meal quickly with when you have these basic ingredients on hand, because that's really what that part is about. It's like eating healthy every day, and it's not about having to plan too far in advance. I mean, there is that whole ritual of soaking grains and beans, but once you get that down, I feel like you can just get home and make something in half an hour, and that's really... I really hope people are inspired to cook. That's my goal, is to get people cooking more for themselves, because I feel like the more we cook and the more we're, you know, taking care of our own health, the more aware we become of where our food comes from. And that's really important. So,
and of course, celebrate the art
and
of life.
Yes, that's the thing. It doesn't have to be, you know, hard or boring. It can be really fun and bring people together.
And teach your little ones to make daiquiris at a young age.
That's right.
Thank you. Everyone should run out and get At Home in the Whole Food Kitchen. Amy Chaplin, thank you for this. Thank you for introducing this to the cookbook world. I think it's going to be a real stunner.
Thank you so much for having me. Cheers. I really appreciate it.
You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Hoping to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.